The following program is sponsored by the Jelinski Advisory Group. Josh Jelinski is the president of Wealth Quarterback LLC, a registered investment advisory firm located in New Jersey. Registration is not an endorsement of the firm or its representatives by securities regulators, nor is it an indication that the advisor has attained a particular level of skill or ability. Investment advisory services may only be provided to clients in jurisdictions in which the firm and its representatives are appropriately registered or exempt from registration. You should not assume that any discussion or information contained in this broadcast serves as the receipt of or as a substitute for personalized investment advice from the advisor. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and there can be no assurance that the future performance of any specific investment, investment strategy, or product, or any non-investment related content made reference to directly or indirectly in this broadcast will be profitable, equal any corresponding indicated historical performance level or levels, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Tired of losing money in the stock market roller coaster? Frustrated with the government taxing you into oblivion? Worried about inflation? How do you prepare for so many financial uncertainties? Welcome to the show that will help you develop your game plan. The Financial Quarterback with Josh Jelinski. Josh is a noted financial advisor and president of the Jelinski Advisory Group, and he's here to answer your questions. Now, let's kick off your financial future. Here's Josh Jelinski.
This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, and we're going to be joined next by a man who is saying the Fed isn't as powerful as people would indicate. So up next, we have a special guest on for you, and David Ranson, president and director of research at HCWE. He will join us to discuss the history of interest rates and talk a bit about how that affects the American economy. Also, we're going to talk about how financial institutions adjusted their practices to adjust to interest rates and the shifting meaning of money. So good morning, David.
Yes, good morning.
Great. Good to have you with us. So the what is that? So basically you're saying the Fed is not as influential as people make it out to be. It's not the boogeyman.
That's right. We can measure the impact that the Fed has, and we've got data going back more than 60 years, and particularly data on the short-term interest rate that the Fed is setting on a regular basis. And we can measure that it doesn't have the effect in the last 20 years or more that it had 40 years ago or 60 years ago. It has declined over the entire time frame.
What's your proof of that?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Yeah, what's your proof of that? I mean, it seems from an observer that the Fed is all powerful. You know? Hello?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Oh, go ahead. So it seems from my perspective that this sounds almost as if the Fed, you know, I don't get how the Fed is. I don't understand what you're saying. The myth of the all-powerful Federal Reserve. I don't. How is that the case? It seems like they are all powerful. I guess.
Well, they talk the same way as they always did, but their power is a matter of what the impact is on the economy. And we can measure it. We have lots and lots of figures on the economy, and some are better than others. But there's no question that the impact that a change in short-term interest rates has on the economy used to be extremely powerful, and a very large rise in short-term rates was capable of producing a recession as late as the 1990s. But it died over a long period of time. It was no longer as powerful, even in the 1990s, as in earlier decades. And in decades since then, we can measure that it has declined further, to the point where it's not visible, it's not detectable anymore, if you look at the economy as a whole. I'm not saying that individual people aren't affected by short-term interest rates. They certainly are. But the economy as a whole can sidestep the effects. The especially sophisticated investors controlling very large pools of money are able to hedge against interest rate risk in ways today that was never that were never possible in the past.
Okay, we're with David Ranson, who just wrote an article on the myth of the all-powerful Federal Reserve. He's taught economics at the University of Chicago, Graduate School of Business, been an assistant to then Treasury Secretary William E. Simon, and a member of George P. Shultz's personal staff at the OMB. So basically, the Fed is not that powerful, in your opinion. No offense, I don't see it. I think everything hinges off of what the Fed's doing, but that's just how I take it. I mean, I'm not as learned as you are. But it appears to me, this is just as somebody who maybe isn't as in the know as you are, it appears to me that the Fed is almost trying to derail the economic growth we're experiencing. I mean, I don't know why we should have rates be raised anymore. We've raised them enough. The economy hasn't cratered, but we have experienced two mini corrections in the last, you know, so many months. Wouldn't that be time to kind of stop the rate hikes for a while?
Well, I do agree with you about this. There's no need for the Fed to raise interest rates when inflation is as low as it is. I think inflation is extremely low and extremely stable. So I agree with that. My point is that even if the Fed does raise interest rates, and it seems like we're stuck with it, that's what they intend to do, it isn't going to turn us upside down. Now, you mentioned some setbacks in the stock market. There was one in February and another one very recently. They don't seem to correlate at all with what the Fed is actually doing. They result, I think, from an uprising of uncertainties about different things. Trading. And the Fed could be part of the uncertainty, but the actual actions by the Fed don't correlate anymore with downturns or pauses or even stock market panics.
Now, when we're talking about the history of interest rates, when did the Fed kind of start this? And I also want you to talk about later on inflation, because and flesh this out for the average person. You know, we hear this stuff, and if you're in finance, you kind of know a little bit, but the average listener, I think, is clueless as to how these all kind of are interconnected. Even when you said, you know, inflation is low, the average person might say, hey, you know, my cost of a gallon of milk's going up a little bit. My cost of bread is going up. My packaging is, you know, I remember when they used to give you a half gallon of ice cream. Now a half gallon is the There is no such thing. They give you a pint for the cost a half gallon used to cost. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yes. We have had a lot of inflation over the years. When I say inflation is slow or low now, that's because we haven't really had any substantial changes in the average price of all the goods and services in the last year or two. So but the history of interest rates and the history of the Fed's involvement in interest rates goes back, I would say the best place to start looking at this is around 1939, when the outbreak of the war in Europe. The United States already was starting to prepare for the eventuality that it would be involved in the war, and it needed to be financially well equipped for that. And the Fed began at that point to not exactly to fix interest rates, but to get involved in the interest rate market, and it did so in the bond market. It was influencing long-term bond prices and long-term bond yields back in 1939-40, and of course when the U.S. did go to the war in 41, there was a large expansion in this plan. And the idea was to keep interest rates as low as possible so that the federal government could borrow at very favorable rates in order to finance its war effort. And that evolved over time. It was effective during the war, and then after the war, there was a short period where the Fed really didn't have functions of that sort until the beginning of the 1950s. And, of course, we had another war at that time, the Korean War. But at this point, the Fed had moved over to taking more interest in short-term interest rates. And the Fed began to peg short-term interest rates roughly at the time that the Korean War came to an end. And it's been pegging short-term interest rates ever since.
Mm. We're with David Renson talking about the history of interest rates. So basically, the Fed has been, should we say, manipulating? Do you think it's been a constructive force in the economy, a negative force?
Different. Well, my opinion is that it hasn't been constructive, but you'll find many, many economists who think it has. This is very disputed. My own belief is that financial markets can take care of their own, and that the interest rate that they come up with is the right interest rate to allow the economy to operate without any frictions. Once you start manipulating interest rates, you're creating uncertainties and frictions which prevent that. So that's my personal point of view.
Hmm. And we're seeing this, too, with a lot of people questioning the independence of the Fed now and them trying to bolster their independence in some way, almost like the Supreme Court members. They're appointed by the president, but they're trying to say, hey, we're independent no matter what, and we're not going to let the president tell us how to accommodate, I mean, of either party. You know, it's been sort of a staple. But what about the onlooker who says, you know, when we had a president that was maybe more palatable to the members of the Fed, interest rates were kept low for a little too long, and they always invoke, you know, these various rules to say, well, no, we were following this rule. But then when you look at the rule that might have caused for negative interest rates, and I want you to flesh this out in a way that our listeners can sort of understand what's going on with negative interest rates, the Taylor rule, inflation in the next segment, because I think a lot of people are kind of clueless on that. Their eyes glaze over. So we're going to take one more, the next segment, to break down all of these rules that the Fed uses. And we'll talk about inflation up next. This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. And if you want the window of opportunity review, there is a 7-year window of an opportunity to potentially get smart about taxes on your retirement. The Smart Retirement Book will be yours free when you schedule and keep your no-obligation review. We'll be in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island, and Pennsylvania. So call us now, 888-988-JOSH, 888-988-5674. Don't touch that dial.
Tax-deferred vehicles such as 401ks and IRAs sound good up front, but did you realize that when you retire, you'll have to pay taxes on all your earnings? You can legally minimize your taxes when you withdraw retirement funds with tax-free IRAs and other tax-favored accounts. Call the Jelinski Advisory Group now at 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH. To learn how you could enjoy a higher standard of living with these tax-favored accounts, make sure you don't get blindsided by taxes on your retirement plans. Call Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, now for a complimentary one-hour consultation to empower your financial decisions. Leave your checkbook at home. They will not sell anything at this meeting, but they'll educate you on your many options in retirement. In fact, if you call right now for one of the complimentary no-fee tax-fighting reviews, they will give you a copy of the book Tax-Free Retirement as a free gift if you call within the next 3 minutes. Call 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH. Now let's get back in the huddle with the financial quarterback.
The all-powerful Federal Reserve. We're going to post that on Facebook at fb.com/thefinancialquarterback. So go over, I mean, I always found, and I'm no economist of your rank, Mr. Ranson, but when I look at the Taylor rule and some of these rules with which the Fed says, hey, we will peg the interest rates not based upon partisan affiliation. We're going to follow this rule. And then they'll say, okay, well, if we followed these rules, we would have been in negative interest rate territory. I always say, well, what do you think QE was? QE 1, 2, and 3. How would an economist, of your caliber think of that?
Well, economists are all over the place, as you know. There's a very wide variety of opinions among economists. There's an awful lot of uncertainty about all of these issues. So I can only really give you my view, and maybe I can give you my sense of the general view of economists, especially academic economists, perhaps. My own view is that a rule is better than nothing, because a rule would constrain the Fed to do things which are not going to suddenly surprise markets, provide a shock effect, which I think is a bad thing for the economy and for all of us. But I personally, I'm not an advocate of any particular rule for the Fed to follow, because I'm not an advocate of the Fed manipulating interest rates in the first place. I believe that the right interest rate is the one that markets come up with, because we have extremely large and extremely competitive financial markets. There's no distortion.
That makes a lot of sense to me, right? But then there are others who would say, well, if the free market would have its hand, then we'd go through these massive depressions, and I know as a student of history, that's not necessarily the case. But how would you respond to that? People say, well, we all want the Fed to intervene when there's an 08 or a Great Depression.
Well, we all want to be saved from a disaster. But unless we have tremendous confidence that the Fed knows enough about what's going on, what exactly is wrong, and what needs to be done, then it's really quite risky looking to the Fed to intervene in the middle of a crisis like 2008.
No, that's true. So, okay, so with these rules, the Taylor rule, what is the rule that the Fed is using now to kind of guide things for them? Or are they following a rule?
I don't think they're following a rule. You have a voting procedure at the Fed. They go around the table, and different members of the committee will make their own pitch for an interest rate change of some kind or no change. And so different members of that committee maybe have different rules in their minds. The Taylor rule that you mentioned is a very popular one. But I don't think collectively the Fed is following a rule. They're using their judgment as to whether the economy needs an interest rate increase. And their belief is, and I find this very hard to accept, but their belief is that a normal interest rate is the kind of interest rate that we had prior to 2008. And if you go all the way back to 2007, you find that the interest rate the Fed was fixing at that time, pegging is the word they use, was 5%. And so the word normalization in Fed speak currently is for interest rates to rise at least towards 5%. That would be normalization. Whether they, I don't think anyone would go as far as 5%, but they're certainly going in that direction. And that's the main reasoning that I can see behind what they're doing. As I said before, there isn't enough inflation in the official figures to justify any substantial or any at all increase in short-term interest rates currently. And there are people at the Fed or within the Federal Reserve System who are quite nervous about raising interest rates under the conditions where inflation is so low. That means a rise in the real interest rate, and that is, as they see it, a potential threat to the economy. And I partially agree with that. I think it's a threat to economic equilibrium. The only place where I don't agree is that I don't think the power is there anymore through this mechanism to create a recession.
Yeah, I just think, just as a financial advisor, if someone can get 5% on a CD, or they can get 3% on a dividend on an S&P 500 stock, and one has risk and the other doesn't, I just see that, from my simplistic view, as a way that money will flow from the riskier asset classes to the safer and cause quite a meltdown in the economy, or at least in the stock market. Now, maybe I don't know all the inner workings as you do, but it seems like that could be a real problem.
Yeah, I think your logic is right. If you subsidize, if you have an artificially high interest rate on short-term money, you're providing a safe haven for investors, which is very lucrative. 5% is a very good return for taking essentially no risk. And you're drawing capital away from not only the stock market, but many other markets which are involved in the economy and which are needed by the economy to put capital where it can be used productively. If you divert the capital to safe havens, then you're weakening the economy. I don't think this is a disaster. I just think it's a bad thing.
Yeah. What do you think long-term, short-term, long-term view of the economy? Are you a cycles analyst? Are you bullish on the economy the next year and a half? When do you think the big, give us your kind of outlook on the economy?
Yes, I should say I'm not a big believer in the business cycle. I'm in many ways, I am more of an iconoclast than many of the economists you may speak to. I think the business cycle has outrun its usefulness. It was never very predictive. The idea that you necessarily had a particular phase coming up next within a foreseeable time frame, I think, was never a good forecasting tool. So I wouldn't work from the business cycle. I am quite positive about the chances that the current economic situation we're in will continue. I believe we've got this high growth rate because the administration is following business-friendly policies for the most part. I'm not a big fan of the administration in every respect, but I do believe that business-friendly policies have effects on the economy and on our growth rate. And in fact, I think they're quite powerful effects, especially if you go from a fairly anti-business-friendly environment 2 or 3 years ago to a much more pro-business environment now. The effect is substantial, and it's been enough to raise our growth rate from less than 2% only about 3 years ago to 4% now, and it looks like a very solid 4% because the next quarter coming up that's just finished, the third quarter of the year, for which we don't have an official GDP estimate yet, the early estimates based on data as opposed to forecasts do suggest a 4% growth rate for the second quarter in a row. I believe this can continue for quarters to come, if not years to come, as long as it's rather like sailing a ship where we've got favorable winds, everything is favorable. As long as we don't do something silly to change the direction of the ship, as long as we don't try overmuch to control it, I think the ship sails very well. It's being fueled by financial markets, by private activity, by private financial markets. It's not being driven by government fiat.
And we're with David Ranson, author of the article, The Myth of the All-Powerful Federal Reserve. And then we'll conclude with this. Is there a difference, you would say, between how interest rates affect economics then, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, than today? Is it different today? Or are they less effective, I guess, from what you're saying?
That is indeed what I'm saying. Financial markets were very small back in earlier decades, especially if you go all the way back to the 1930s. We had small markets. Small markets cannot be deep, and deep unless markets are deep, they can't be resilient. And markets that are as small as they were also driven by relatively unsophisticated financial operators relative to what is the case today. For all of these reasons, they were not able to be to cope with interventions by higher authorities as they are, I think, today.
Thank you, David Ranson, director of research at HCWE, an independent investment research firm in Cambria, California. Also, you can find out more about him at HCWE.com and check our Facebook post. Great to have you on, David. We'll be back after these messages, taking your calls.
Tax-deferred vehicles such as 401ks and IRAs sound good up front. But did you realize that when you retire, you'll have to pay taxes on all your earnings? You can legally minimize your taxes when you withdraw retirement funds with tax-free IRAs and other tax-favored accounts. Call the Jalinski Advisory Group now at 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH to learn how you could enjoy a higher standard of living with these tax-favored accounts. Make sure you don't get blindsided by taxes on your retirement plans. Call Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, now for a complimentary one-hour consultation to empower your financial decisions. Leave your checkbook at home. They will not sell anything at this meeting, but educate you on your many options in retirement. In fact, if you call right now for one of the complimentary, no-fee, tax-fighting reviews, they will give you a copy of the book, Tax-Free Retirement, as a free gift. If you call within the next 3 minutes, call 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH. Now, let's get back in the huddle with a financial quarterback.
Next, we have Mark from Philly. You're on. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark in Northeast Philly. And I was wondering if you think I was maybe if you have the guest on another time, you could ask him if he thinks the Fed actually makes things worse. And you know, if you think the Fed actually makes things worse, I'm basing this on a lawyer author who brought up once the idea of the of von Mises. I think he was back in the 30s. I think there's a von Mises Institute where he said that the something to the effect that the Fed actually their actions trail rather than lead the economy, something like that.
Yeah, no, I would agree that all of these boom and bust cycles are now due to the Fed. So we could have a period of economic growth now. I mean, 4%. We were being told for years that 4% growth wouldn't occur. Do you remember that? And now we're seeing it. And just as we see it, the Fed is, they show no signs of ending their endless rate hikes. So, yeah, no, I think there could be a problem. I mean, I think the people at the Fed, they're trying to do the best that they see how. But in some regard, if you look at the Taylor rule and some of these rules that they follow, they did go negative on rates. They did QE 1, 2, and 3. They didn't exactly go negative. But from 2009 to about 2016, that's when the Taylor rule would have suggested one version. There's a couple different versions of these rules. But, no, great point, Mark, and thanks for the call. Folks, we're going to take your calls all remaining of the hour. But first, call us for the Smart Retirement Book. This week will be in Long Island, New York City, Short Hills, Hackensack, Tom's River, a rare political window of opportunity just opened also this Monday in Princeton, New Jersey. Your political window of opportunity has just opened. A new book by Forbes explains how you may benefit, you and your family. And that is called the Smart Retirement Book, the strategic movement around retirement taxation. And so what do we mean by a rare political window of opportunity? Well, that was the election of Donald J. Trump and the fact that we are not going to have tax rate hikes until 2024, potentially, or 2025. So this tax law will not go away until 2025. It's temporary. That means you have 7 years to act, but you may only have a year to act. What if the Republicans lose control of both the Senate and the House? What's going to happen then? So the tax law could be doomed, and many people are saying, hey, we want higher tax rates. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the like. So what do we do? You should get educated on your money. Call us right now, 888-988-JOSH. Also, if you have any financial questions, now is the time to chime in. Kamala Harris and other prominent Democrats want to push to repeal and replace the Trump tax cuts. Kamala Harris is warning, with the midterm elections just 2.5 weeks away, did you register to vote? Are you going to vote by mail? With midterm elections 2.5 weeks away in the 2020 presidential race around the corner, prominent Democrats are embracing an ambitious idea: repeal and replace the $1.5 trillion Republican tax plan. These are the same people, by the way, who said we would never have 4% growth in the economy. I don't know what they're smoking, but maybe they're going to marijuana. Maybe they're going to Canada a little too much. They all said they would move to Canada. Remember that? Kamala Harris and other prominent Democrats want to repeal Trump's tax cuts, this from CNBC, and replace them with cash payouts for the poor and working class. Possible White House contender Kamala Harris announced a plan this week that would give working families $6,000 a year. The proposals would get rid of tax cuts and in turn funnel that money into government-guaranteed cash for low- and middle-income houses. Well, now we're resorting right to out-and-out bribery. So this is pretty interesting. She announced this plan with the option of receiving monthly payments. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat in normally Republican Ohio. This is one of these purple states that the Democrats seem to have a hold on. So maybe Sherrod Brown is on to something. Promise people $6,000 a year and you'll be safe. Also, Ro Khanna, a House rep, and New Jersey's own Bonnie Watson Coleman. Also had a bill that would allow family caregivers and students to receive the money as well. The idea was to provide a clear contrast with Donald Trump. You know what you could actually do with this money? You could give anyone making under $75,000 a raise. The measures are significantly more dramatic than previous Democratic proposals, a reflection of the proximity of the midterm elections. Harris and Brown are potential contenders for the White House, and Democrats have been seeking bold ideas to present their energized electorate. There's all kinds of evidence that voters are not looking for incremental solutions. They're looking for a big vision of how to pick up all the people who've been left behind in this economy. This is from Adam Rubin, campaign director at the Economic Security Project. Harris's plan would create a new tax credit of up to $3,000 for individuals and $6,000 for households. It's also interesting, Mark Benioff, this is of Salesforce, is chiding Mark Dorsey. I think I'm saying his first name wrong, but basically the head of Salesforce is knocking the head of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, because Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff is having a Twitter beef with Jack Dorsey. Basically, billionaires like Benioff are okay with taxing companies more. According to Business Insider, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff on his Twitter beef with Jack Dorsey, you're either for the homeless or you're for yourself. Last Monday, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff admonished San Francisco business leaders who were unwilling to give aid to the city's homeless. Apparently, if you're not for a certain tax, Benioff says you're not for the homeless. Now, I would think that all of these great big companies in Silicon Valley are for the homeless. You know, they're more left-leaning. Why don't they create a big charitable remainder trust and foundation to give to those who are struggling in their neck of the woods? In part due to policies like this that empower the government at the expense of people feeling confident that they can earn their own wages. Harris's plan would create a new tax credit of up to $3,000 for individuals, $6,000 for households. They could opt to receive the money in a lump sum after filing their tax return or in monthly installments. The credit would be refundable. Households earning up to $100K would be eligible for this $6,000 gift. The bill shares many of the same elements of an earlier bill. Their proposal would expand the existing earned income credit up to roughly $12,000 for a family with three children. The money could also be paid monthly, but it could cover households earning up to $76,000. Why don't we just say if you make under a certain amount, you don't pay taxes? Why have these tax credits? Why don't we just lower the tax rates? That would make sense, right? Rather than getting a gimme, because it's not about that. So, with the likes of Mark Benioff, Salesforce CEO, and Kamala Harris agreeing on something, they're agreeing on one thing. That is, your money isn't yours. It is the government's to dole out to whomever and whoever they will. What do you think about the Benioff-Dorsey debate? If you want to chime in on the Jack Dorsey-Mark Benioff debate, and if you want to think about this. Think about this hard. If people who are contenders for the president in 2020 get in 2020, or maybe they don't get in 2020, maybe they get in 2024, what does that mean? You have a window of opportunity now to potentially look at your assets and say, what could I reposition from forever taxed accounts into tax efficient strategies? Call us now, 888-988-JOSH, 888-988-JOSH, 888-988-5674, and get a free book when you schedule and keep your no-obligation review. We'll be back after these messages.
Tax-deferred vehicles such as 401ks and IRAs sound good up front, but did you realize that when you retire, you'll have to pay taxes on all your earnings? You can legally minimize your taxes when you withdraw retirement funds with tax-free IRAs and other tax-favored accounts. Call the Jelinski Advisory Group now at 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH to learn how you could enjoy a higher standard of living with these tax-favored accounts. Make sure you don't get blindsided by taxes on your retirement plans. Call Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, now for a complimentary one-hour consultation to empower your financial decisions. Leave your checkbook at home. They will not sell anything at this meeting, but they'll educate you on your many options in retirement. In fact, if you call right now for one of the complimentary no-fee tax-fighting reviews, they will give you a copy of the book Tax-Free Retirement as a free gift if you call within the next 3 minutes. Call 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH. Now let's get back in the huddle with the financial quarterback.
Jelinski taking your calls. So Benioff and Dorsey debate on Twitter is heating up, and it's reminding us that there are many people in the business community and around, you know, the country who do not believe that your money is necessarily yours. You didn't earn that. So in liberal San Francisco, tech leaders are brawling over a tax proposal to aid the homeless. Here's what's going to happen. Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff is probably going to move to Florida in a couple years. That's how hypocritical some of these people are. If he stays, why doesn't he take part in the giving pledge? Imagine that. I mean, that would be a cool thing if Mark Benioff says, you know what? I always thought Salesforce's overpriced CRM. I mean, he's defied expectations with his business brilliance. Mark Benioff, if you're a student of him, he actually deployed a lot of the Tony Robbins strategies in his whole company. And so you walk in and they have this, these cascading screens. And really, he has this Unleash the Power Within seminar and really an admirable fellow. But I find a little bit of a problem. Apparently, he's saying, hey, we should pony up. But what's going to happen? What happened to Google? You know, they moved a lot of stuff to New York because New York had less taxes than California. Think about that. Well, maybe this will be good. Maybe if they keep raising taxes, we'll get more jobs on the East Coast instead of the West Coast. But here's what I see. Why don't they all band together and say, you know what, we're going to have a work program. We're going to teach these people how to program. We're going to teach them how to live in the new economy. It's interesting. So what do you think? Who's right? Jack Dorsey of Twitter or Mark Benioff of Salesforce? Now, some of these billionaires are quiet. So they apparently don't want to be on here. But think about this. You're either for the homeless or you're for yourself. So here's the thing. Is that really what we've come down to? If you're not for a certain tax, you're against charitable giving? I would like the different presidents of these companies to reveal how much they're giving to the poor and homeless. And maybe they do a giving pledge of their own. So they're going back and forth. Who do you think's right? According to the New York Times, this is interesting. For months, tech companies in San Francisco are brawling over this. There's a whole host of things. And then Fortune, Mark Benioff lashing out. And what's at the root of this is something called Proposition C. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's a question on San Francisco's ballot that will put additional taxes on businesses with revenue above $50 million to fund efforts to reduce homelessness. If passed, the proposition is expected to bring in up to $300 million to support affordable housing, shelters, and mental health treatment, doubling current investments. Why don't they take that $300 million and give these people job training? Why don't they take that $300 million and say, you know what, you're going to get a tax credit, company, if you do this. But that's not what's going to happen. Even though it could cost Salesforce up to $10 million in taxes annually, Benioff has already pledged $2 million to support the measure. So it's not that he's like giving away $2 million. I think that would be far better for him. He argues that the annual cost of Proposition C is still less than what Salesforce is saving from recent tax cuts. Jack Dorsey, CEO of both Twitter and Square, have voiced support for San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who opposes the measure. So this is interesting. When the San Francisco mayor opposes something, we may want to rethink this. So Benioff got into the Twitter spat last week. Now, Dorsey argued that while he supports efforts to help the homeless, he doesn't believe Prop C is the best way to do it. He just doesn't want to give, that's all. He hasn't given anything of consequence in the city. We have 70 billionaires in San Francisco. Not all of them are giving money away. A lot of them are just hoarding it. They're keeping it. That's just who they are and how they look at money. Whoa. Well, you know, and that's only a step or two away from, oh, you have an IRA? You have $2 million in your IRA? You have $3 million in your IRA? You have $5 million in an IRA? You have too much money. That's why you need to do tax planning now. Call us, 888-9-8-8. Josh, next up we have Bob. You're on with Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback.
Yes. Josh, as far as the homeless people are concerned, why don't they put them to work to help build our infrastructure? Nothing has been done about infrastructure. Our roads are falling apart.
Yeah, I think with some of these homeless, though, if the I agree with you. I think the problem with people who are struggling with the state of homelessness is sometimes they're the drug addicted. Sometimes they're people who don't have the job training, you know. But yeah, definitely. I mean, send them to school, teach them how to be welders, teach them how to be good construction workers. If we're going to be giving away these handouts, for sure. No, that's a good point. So we're going to take a short break. When we return, we'll be back with more of your thoughts. This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. Don't touch that dial.
Tax-deferred vehicles such as 401ks and IRAs sound good up front. But did you realize that when you retire, you'll have to pay taxes on all your earnings? You can legally minimize your taxes when you withdraw retirement funds with tax-free IRAs and other tax-favored accounts. Call the Jelinski Advisory Group now at 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH to learn how you could enjoy a higher standard of living with these tax-favored accounts. Make sure you don't get blindsided by taxes on your retirement plans. Call Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, now for a complimentary one-hour consultation to empower your financial decisions. Leave your checkbook at home. They will not sell anything at this meeting, but educate you on your many options in retirement. In fact, if you call right now for one of the complimentary, no-fee, tax-fighting reviews, they will give you a copy of the book, Tax-Free Retirement, as a free gift. If you call within the next 3 minutes, call 888-988-JOSH. That's 888-988-JOSH. Now, let's get back in the huddle with a financial quarterback.
Thanks for the times that you've given me. The memories are all in my mind. And now that we've come to the end of...
This is Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback. Go ahead.
Good morning, Josh. This is Joe from New Jersey. I have a question. I saw something on the internet the other night. It said in reference to an investment that they call federal rent checks, whereby you make an investment and you get money monthly, and that's the result of the federal rent checks that the different departments have to pay rent for, like Social Security, FBI buildings, and they call it federal rent checks.
Well, I'm assuming it is a teaser. There are these internet teaser articles. Can Americans now collect federal rent checks? A good website to expose some of these teaser articles is a website called thestockgumshoe.com, and may this be a lesson to you. They're probably talking about REITs, and generally REITs that invest in government properties. What they won't tell you is that, you know, that, you know, probably the particular REIT they're talking about went down 50% or something like that. You got to watch yourself with these internet teaser articles. I'm amazed at how many people will buy $99 internet newsletters. It's almost like buying a lottery ticket in light of the, you know, $1 billion lotto winning. I would avoid these teaser articles. If you call us at 888-988-JOSH, I'll tell you exactly what the stock is that they're talking about, and it'll save you, you know, $99 or however much these internet teaser articles. You got to realize getting a financial plan is what you should do. Getting educated on exchange-traded funds, various types of stocks, various protected accounts, that's how you become a smart financial consumer. Not reading these financial, you know, they're almost like, you know, news rags, right? They're very, you know, they're just, you know, they're out to take your money. And I would try to eliminate Losing Financial Strategies, otherwise known as ELFS, LFS, Losing Financial Strategies. And one of those is trying to get rich quick with lottery tickets and with these internet news rags. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah, I thought it sounded too good to be true.
No, what they're telling you is it's some type of REIT that is investing in the government checks, and I'll explain to you what it is, and it could make sense, but you realize you could lose money in those stocks, right? So, yes, they are getting checks every month at a rent, but you have to realize there are risks there. So, Stock Gumshoe helped me on that one. And I can help you and any of our listeners. If you're seeing something online, it could be a certain annuity to buy. It could be a certain annuity not to buy. It could be this program, that program. You want a second opinion on your wealth, call us now, 888-988-JOSH. 888-988-5674. 888-988-JOSH. Call us now. We'll be back after these messages. 888-988-JOSH. 888-988-JOSH. Call us now for the free book, When You Schedule and Keep Your No Obligation Review. We're going to be in Long Island, New York City, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and a spot near you. 888-988-JOSH. 888-988-5674.
Any awards, rankings, or recognition by unaffiliated third parties or publications, including five-star wealth manager, advisory of the year finalist by senior market advisor, and top of the million-dollar roundtable, are in no way indicative of the advisor's future performance or any individual client's investment success. No award, ranking, or recognition should be construed as a current or past endorsement of Josh Jelinski or Wealth Quarterback LLC. Information regarding specific awards, rankings, or recognitions is available on the Wealth Quarterback website at www.jelinski.com. Jelinski.org. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. Investment strategies such as asset allocation, diversification, or rebalancing do not assure or guarantee better performance and cannot eliminate the risk of investment losses. There are no guarantees that a portfolio employing these or any other strategy will outperform a portfolio that does not engage in such strategies. This broadcast should not be construed by any client or prospective client as a solicitation to effect or attempt to effect transactions in securities or the rendering of personalized investment advice. Due to various factors, including changing market conditions, the information discussed in this broadcast may no longer be reflective of current positions or recommendations. While information presented is believed to be factual and up to date, Josh Jelinski and Wealth Quarterback do not guarantee its accuracy, and it should not be regarded as a complete analysis of the subjects discussed. The tax and estate planning information discussed is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as legal or tax advice. Listeners should consult an attorney or tax professional regarding their specific legal or tax situation.